everyone, John Wertheim here. This is this week's Sports Illustrated / Tennis Channel Tennis Podcast. We have a mid-Wimbledon edition. This is a conversation with Nicole Gibbs. A lot of you know Nicole, WTA Tour player, went to Stanford and recently had a cancer diagnosis. She's been going about her business, trying to whittle down her ranking and make a living as a tennis player, and that was temporarily derailed. A lot of you had written in and on Twitter and asked about Nicole, and I figured let's just go right to the source. She's always been wonderfully candid and had an interesting perspective on what she's been through the last 90 days, some of the challenges she's faced, how this has caused her to rethink and reexamine her career and, in a broader way, her life. Great conversation entirely owing to the guest. I think you will enjoy this. A lot of perspective here. The spoiler alert is that Nicole will be back in July. She did not get a Wimbledon wildcard, unfortunately, but she will be back in action this month. So maybe that helps knowing that before you listen. But this is a great conversation. So here's Nicole. I feel like I want to get out of the way and just let you share your story. It's been an interesting few months for you, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been weird to say the least.
What was the what's the first plot point here?
Yeah, so a couple months ago, I was actually getting ready to go to Caroline Wozniacki's bachelorette party, and you know, as part of that, I was doing all my beauty routines, getting my eyelash extensions, getting my nails done, just trying to look cute for the weekend, you know, very important stuff. And I got an email in my inbox from my dentist, who I had probably not seen in about a year or a year and a half. And there was a promotion. It was like free teeth whitening with your next appointment. And I was like, perfect. Couldn't be better timing. And so I called my dentist and scheduled an appointment before I would go on the trip. And while I was there, my dentist inadvertently found this mass in the roof of my mouth that, excuse me, I had actually been aware of for quite some time, and by that I mean several years. But I had brought it up with my doctor before, and she thought it was this thing called a torus palatinus, which is essentially like a bony growth that you can get in the roof of your mouth. I told my dentist that. I was like, my GP didn't think it was anything. And he said, I still think I would get it checked out. And so me being me, I get very stressed out with medical things. I schedule an appointment for the very next morning, first thing. And I had an oral surgeon take out the tumor for biopsy. And he assured me, he looked at it, and he was like, this is going to be benign for sure. Like, go have fun on your trip. You know, the surgery was really minimal, so I was still able to, enjoy myself and be normal. And then I got back, and I was kind of waiting on the news and kind of, starting to get surprised that I hadn't heard back yet. And so I started pestering the doctor's office, and finally a doctor got on the phone with me and was like, hey, do you want to come in and talk about the results? At which point I was like, no, just tell me what it is, because obviously that means it's bad. And he told me it was cancer, and kind of nothing beyond that, just it's cancer. If you want to come in for a few minutes and talk about it, that's fine, but I'm not really going to have any color to add to the situation because I'm not a specialist in this. So that was kind of a wild week or so. And it took us a full 3 or so days from then to get any sort of prognostic clarity about, whether it was good cancer, bad cancer, on the spectrum of cancers. It ended up being pretty much the best possible case scenario. But those 3 days kind of living in that uncertainty was definitely something I've never experienced before, just having no idea of the scope of where things were. So that was the start to the story. And things have gone gotten a little bit easier from there, but that was definitely the worst of the crisis moment.
We'll save a discussion of Carolyn Wozniacki's Girls Weekend for another time. But you get back. Are you
you have 3 days of, are you online? Are you just waiting for results? Are you trying to proactively game plan? What are those 3 days like?
Yeah, so, I mean, I had heard from other friends of mine who had gone through similar situations that Google is generally not the best thing to do.
Yeah.
When you're facing a situation like that. And of course, me being me, I didn't listen. And the first thing I did was like, you know, oral cancer prognosis. And I read like one number that was like 17% 5-year survival and pretty much just had like a full blown panic attack. And then my fiance was like, okay. And that's where the Googling ends for you. I am our team Googler. And from now on, I will be handling all of this. You know, and so as best we were able to, or I should say as he was able to, because I was not allowed anywhere near that anymore, he did research based on the very sparse pathology report that we received from the oral surgery place, and we were somewhat comforted by what we were reading on my, you know, prognosis or on my pathology report against what we were reading online. But again, you know, there was just so much uncertainty, no one we could really talk to. You know, it was a really rare form of cancer as it was first diagnosed. I think it makes up 1% of all cancers, mucoepidermoid carcinoma, which is basically a fancy way of saying salivary gland cancer. So we were in a position of not really knowing anything, and I was banned from Google immediately, and I was taking a lot of Xanax to make it through the day.
I was going to say, I love how certain workplaces ban you from certain websites. You've got the Google ban in your household.
Yes, I have a cancer ban on Google.
You mentioned Xanax, and you've also been very outspoken about mental health. What was the interplay here between mental health and having this uncertainty and this destabilization?
So, you know, it's really interesting. I've actually been largely off medication for the last year. Haven't taken anything. Haven't really been in therapy. Been plugging away, using my mindfulness in a pretty good place. But of course, you know, you receive traumatic news or something like that. And, you know, I had an old Xanax prescription. I immediately messaged my psychiatrist and I was like, hey, extenuating circumstances, do you think it would be appropriate for me to use it? And he's like, yeah, absolutely. Like, if there's ever a time for Xanax, it's now. So I kind of took that to heart and, you know, didn't. I guess I didn't judge myself for feeling like I needed that at times. I pretty much only took it before bed just so that I could sleep okay at night. And that helped a lot, just allowing me to get restful night sleeps and, you know, not get too fatigued on the front end of all of the trauma. So, yeah, I mean, I guess the short answer is that my mental health history played into my reaction to my diagnosis a lot less than I thought it would. My immediate thought it was, you know, or like the bad shoulder angel was like, you're weak to begin with. How are you going to handle something like this? And I've been really surprised pleasantly at every turn that, yeah, I've really been able to handle it, and I think it's just like kind of a testament to human strength. We don't really know what we're capable of until we have to be capable of it. And in a way, my anxiety and my depression were very quiet through this whole experience because I didn't have any room for them.
Right, it was right.
Just like, what do I need to do to survive the next 10 minutes, the next 2 days, the next 48, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, they were surprisingly in the background for me and have continued to.
Where's tennis in all this?
You know, immediately off the bat, not even part of my mental landscape. I think I was, you know, immediately thrown into that kind of, okay, what does this mean? for me as a human? Like, do I have an expiration date? Like, am I going to have to go through, like, really traumatizing therapies? Am I going to have to do chemo? You know, it definitely occurred to me, like, wow, like, you know, maybe for all the times I've been like, oh, you know, tennis is so brutal, I want to quit tennis, it might be taken away from me. And that was a really profound thought, and something that stuck with me as I've set to come back. But yeah, I think, you know, the number one priority was just like, okay, how do we get me back to a normal quality of life, or is that going to be attainable? Am I going to have permanent, you know, issues with my mouth? You know, there were just so many unanswered questions in the first few days.
Do you have the answers to some of those questions now?
Yes. So the surgery was successful. We had a little bit of a surprise, a couple of surprises after surgery. So initially, I was supposed to be in the hospital for 2 days on a feeding tube for the same 2 days. And then I was supposed to be discharged on the third day. And, you know, set about recovering in some sort of, like, 4 to 6 week timeline, which we thought I could shrink, you know, given that I was healthy going into surgery. And then a couple of things happened. First of all, my tumor had been biopsied so extensively. Like, basically, they took out the entire tumor when normally when you biopsy, you would leave some for the surgeon in case it is, you know, a case like mine. And my surgeon said when he went in to actually, like, cut me open, he wasn't even sure where the tumor was in my mouth anymore because the biopsy had taken out so much tissue. And so, ironically, the surgery had to be a little more invasive for my surgeon to be, you know, entirely confident that he got the tissue that he needed.
Wow.
So that was the first kind of setback, which is kind of crazy and just, you know, kind of shitty luck. And then the second setback was, I had this prosthetic that was put in my mouth that was like kind of like a glorified retainer, that I had fitted before the surgery. And the idea was it would be in 24/7 for the first like couple weeks after surgery. And I would only take it out, to wash it once a day. And that's to prevent, you know, infection and protect the area, you know, on the roof of my mouth while it was healing. And there was an issue with the prosthetic. So it basically like wasn't staying on the roof of my mouth, and they had to screw it into the roof of my mouth, instead of just popping it in like a retainer. And so that was a setback for a couple of different reasons. First of all, you can't rinse it. You know, you can't take it out to rinse it when it's screwed in. So for the entire week that I ended up being in the hospital, they couldn't take it out to rinse it, which obviously like caused infection and all sorts of, you know, unfortunate byproducts. And then the second thing is that the doctor couldn't see in to check on the status of the wound. And so when I went home from the hospital, I checked out and immediately went to the prosthetic clinic to have them remove the screw. And then when I went home, I found that one of the sutures in the back of my wound had blown open. And what that meant was basically I had a gaping hole in the roof of my mouth. For practical concerns, what that meant was anytime I tried to drink water, it would just immediately come out of my nose. And we had had indications of that in the hospital, where I had tried to drink water and it would come out my nose. And so I ended up being on a feeding tube for 3 full weeks instead of the 2 days that they had originally slated me for. So just a couple really unlucky things that, you know, shouldn't have happened but did happen. And that kind of set me back for a little while.
Could you do anything physical? I mean, could you? You're not.
Not in the first 3 weeks. 3 weeks, I was pretty much laid out. I was on oxy. I was, you know, taking all the bad drugs that you shouldn't be taking for 3 weeks.
Right.
And then, of course, the next step, which is suffering the withdrawals from taking the medications that you shouldn't be taking for 3 weeks. But at about that 3 week mark, I started to get antsy, and I got back in the gym, even if it was like pretty pathetic. And started getting out on hikes and just getting active because I was so stir crazy. But I kind of diverted a little bit here. The good news was, after a week in the hospital, my surgeon came in to update me on everything, and he said that the margins were clear, which was awesome. He did give me some concerning news, which was that I had a re-diagnosis, and so it wasn't what they originally thought, this new thing called sclerosing microcystic adenocarcinoma. And if I had thought the previous diagnosis was rare, allegedly there are only 12 documented cases the one that I now have. And the only distinction between that previous one that they thought I had and this one is that the cancer can travel aggressively along my nerve pathways. So it is a little concerning in as much as it can kind of jump tissue in a way that the previous diagnosis would not have allowed for. So it's a little creepy, but my surgeon assures me that the behavior of my tumor suggests that it was not traveling aggressively along my nerves. It simply had the capability to do so if it had wanted, which I guess is comforting, but in the moment was a little jarring.
It's so strange how we give these qualities to cancer as if it is a, you know, a sentient being. You said this was a time of mindset shift. What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
I think it's hard to come away from, like, you know, being confronted with your mortality and not have some sort of, you know, attitude shift toward the world around you. I've been so blessed in my life. I have experienced very little unscheduled loss in terms of, you know, people around me. Anytime my friends have dealt with illness, they've come out the other side, you know, victorious. So for me to kind of like have to face down, even for 3 days, the idea that, you know, I might not be around anymore, I think it just puts everything in a completely new perspective, made me think about tennis differently and view it with a lot more gratitude. And also a lot less seriousness. I was like, wow, in the scheme of all the things I worry about on a day-to-day basis, like,
right.
It's really kind of irrelevant. And so I think that's led to a couple of epiphanies. one that I credit to Phil Knight, because I'm in the middle of Shoe Dog right now.
Okay, sure.
And he's talking about just like how he just ruthlessly reinvested every penny that he had into his dream of Nike.
Right.
And I was kind of thinking about that from a tennis perspective, and, you know, with this newfound, like, sense of my own, like, mortality, not just as a human, but maybe as a tennis player, too, is, like, okay, like, why am I not investing, like, every penny that I'm earning, in a sense, like, back into my game? I've always been, like, very... you know, stingy, always trying to find good deals and, you know, worrying about spending too much money and worrying about my bottom line. I think moving forward, I'm going to try to view tennis a lot less like that and a lot more as just this incredible experience that I'm lucky to be able to have, and, you know, invest everything I have into it to see how good I can be. And then, you know what, if I don't cut it, there will be other much more stable, much less risk-inducing careers for after tennis. So I guess that's one of the biggest takeaways, and then just that kind of, like, permanent sense of gratitude that you get whenever you have, like, kind of a confrontation with mortality.
That's really profound. I mean, it sounds like you want to bet on yourself a little bigger.
Oh, for sure. I think in so many ways I have. In a lot of other ways, some of them mental, I haven't allowed myself to kind of like go all in, whether it be like fear of failure, or I think I've always had this sense like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, some tennis player who loses money on tour. For some reason, that was always really like, you know, like shocking for me. It's like, oh, like how can you take yourself seriously if you're not even making money at what you do? And now I'm like, wow, like that's such a shallow way to look at things. And actually, I had it backwards. And I think I need to look at it a little different way and look at it as an experience and finding ways to maximize not only like what I can be on the court, but what I can be as a person. And if that means, you know, spending money, you know, hiring more people, different people, getting new perspectives, like, so be it. And, you know, that's great. The more the merrier.
I think that's your Iowa component with the frugality. you did get to go to Carolyn Wozniacki's wedding, so that's a plus.
Yes, and that was very last minute. I was actually really struggling about a week before, had just not turned the corner, was still in a lot of pain, having trouble coming off of my pain meds. And on a whim, I emailed my doctor and I was like, so, by the way, I'm assuming Tuscany for my friend's wedding is out of the question. And he was like, no, I think you need to go. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And ironically, I think that helped me so much, just having something to look forward to, and like get motivated to, you know, do the silly things like, you know, shop for an outfit to wear. And like, you know, I just started being more of a normal human as soon as I was okay to go on that. I spent less time on the couch and more time actually doing things out in the world. It was really helpful for me. And then the wedding itself was completely magical. Everything you might expect and more.
Give us, I feel like my wife here would, give us some details. What, I don't know, when your friends say, what was it like, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the venue was just outrageous. I mean, we were staying in these beautiful villas. And, you know, Caroline and David were kind enough to cover that for everyone. So at no expense to ourselves, which was, you know, incredible and so generous. And, you know, the rosewood there is just, you can't even capture it in photos. It looks unbelievable in photos, but in person, it was just this, like, fake fairy tale. We were all joking because, like, during the ceremony, I swear, like, 5 minutes before they started walking down the aisle, like, all of these birds started chirping all around us. It was like, oh, my gosh, are we in Cinderella right now? Like, this is actually, like, a storybook, fake, so perfect wedding. So it was amazing to be a part of and just, you know, surrounded by so much love. And the two families are incredible. So I just felt really fortunate to be a part of it.
And I think it speaks to the sisterhood of your profession as well. This was one of your first big activities, was to go see a colleague get married.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, she's one of my best friends and also you know, a huge role model and mentor for me, and has just been incredible for me throughout this entire process also. So to get to go celebrate with her was really special, I think, for both of us, but let's say especially for me.
And you have your own wedding to prepare for, am I correct?
I do. And that was another, wow, that was really funny. That was another kind of like flash before my eyes moment. Like when we were going through this diagnosis, I was like, wow, like, are we going to get to get married? Are we going to have to reschedule? Am I going to be dead? Like, I just had no idea what was happening. So I'm definitely viewing our wedding with a new layer of gratitude as well.
Make sure birds come out like 5 minutes before you walk down the aisle.
Right? I mean, it's kind of unfair to have to follow that. I feel like that kind of rendered all future weddings irrelevant, but we will do our best.
Where are you at now? Obviously not playing, but I mean, where are you metaphysically? How are you looking at the rest of the summer? What are your GPS coordinates? Interior, yeah. Right now.
Yeah, so I'm, let's see, what's the date right now? I'm about 5 weeks out of surgery, and I have logged about two and a half, almost 3 weeks in the gym already, which is awesome. And I started on court earlier this week, and I was really lucky because I had such a good base with my trainer. that honestly, I kind of like felt like I picked up where I left off in terms of tennis. I've been joking with everyone down at Carson at the USTA Center that the difference between taking 3 days off and taking 5 weeks off is pretty marginal. Once you've hit your 10,000 hours, I think you can like play tennis in your sleep, or at least if you have the fitness base. So big shout out to my trainer for getting me back on my feet as quick as possible.
Name check.
Danny Ciccolini.
All right, Ciccolini.
He's epic. I linked up with him via my old trainer, Mike Guevara, and he recommended this guy highly, and we started working together in December, and it's been awesome. He's been so supportive through everything and is, you know, my number one fan and also, you know, my number one pusher, really just like day in, day out, making sure I'm getting myself back into fighting shape. So I was actually very ambitious. I did throw my hat in the ring for a Wimbledon wild card because I will be starting playing points on Monday, so I would have a full week of point play under my belt by the time I started. But Wimbledon did just announce, and I think they went like next five in or something as opposed to awarding wild cards. So not to me this time around. I think I ended up like 9 out, so that was pretty frustrating, but it is what it is, and I'll be ready to come back 1 week after that in Honolulu now.
That's not bad.
No, not bad at all. I feel very lucky. And, you know, of course, barring any setbacks or anything like that, but the plan right now is to go play Honolulu. That's the week of July 8th, and then the week of July 15th, I'll start my World Team Tennis season, which honestly, like, could not come at a better time. Like, can you imagine any better way to get back into
exactly
playing 14 shortened format matches in 18 days? It's literally as perfect as it could be.
What team are you on?
I'm on the Breakers in Orange County.
Oh, good. I was gonna say, so you don't have to. You can sleep in your own bed sometimes too.
Yep, exactly. So it's not gonna be too harrowing, and I'm already feeling almost myself. I still have a hole in the roof of my mouth, which is why I sound a little funny. That and maybe some congestion from traveling to Italy and back in 4 days. But I'm on the mend, and we're on kind of a wait and see with how long it's going to take for that to close. But my surgeon keeps assuring me that it will close with time.
All right, last question, because I also feel like you've been talking a long time for someone who just had a lot of road work in her mouth as well.
No, it's fine. I just went to a wedding, so I can handle it.
So let me ask you this. When people go through this a lot, and what they invariably say is, you don't know how much your support meant. And one of the reasons we're talking is because so many people have asked me to check in and how is she doing. You've alluded to it on Instagram as well. When people say how much the support has meant to them, What did that mean to you? I mean, how sort of demonstrably, how does that manifest itself? I mean, I feel like it makes sense intuitively, but I'm always curious how that support really expresses itself. Did that make sense? I didn't ask that particularly well.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. So I'm going to answer that in a really circuitous way. So one of my biggest takeaways, and it sounds weird to say, like, I'm grateful that this happened to me, but I genuinely really am. And I think, you know, it's one of those things where if it's not the worst thing that happens to you, it's probably going to be the best. I have always been so weird around illness and just, like, morbidity in general. I've been really uncomfortable with the premise of illness and death. And it's made me, like, I think hold back in a lot of relationships. Like, you know, tangentially, I had, you know, a friend not too long ago get diagnosed with a really severe form of cancer. And, you know, it wasn't a close friend. It was someone I knew in college, but I just didn't reach out. I didn't know what to say, and so I didn't say anything. And I think one of the most important things that I've learned through this process is, like, there's really nothing that you can say that is worse than saying nothing when someone is going through something like that. And I think it's natural to have an aversion or be uncomfortable if you haven't experienced something like that yourself. But I think just the wisdom of that has been so important. And actually, since going through this, I reached out to that same friend and I was like, hey, how are you? And also, I'm sorry. Here's what I've learned in the last couple months, and I hope you're doing okay. But I just think that all messaging and all sort of like sounds and sights of support while you're going through something difficult just helps you to not feel alone, which I think is the hardest part about going through something like this. Is it's kind of like dark and shadowy and feels like something that you like kind of have to take on alone. I think, you know, in America in particular, I think we're really weird about death and we don't really talk about it. And when people are sick, we try not to talk about it. After I was diagnosed, I had a conversation with Jack and I was like, how can we make this feel a little bit less dark and shadowy? Like, how can we bring some humor to this? I decided right off the bat, you know, I'm open about everything. I'm going to be open about this. I'm going to share snaps from the hospital. I want people to, you know, see a lot of the good moments that happen while you're going through something like this. I think that's been my biggest takeaway, is just like any support is so meaningful because it adds to that feeling of community and being supported. And that's the number one thing you need when you're lying in a hospital bed. I've always kind of thought flowers were silly, and I loved every like bouquet of flowers that I got. It was so meaningful. I think it made me completely shift the way that I deal with my interpersonal relationships and the way that I think about illness and my own morbidity, but also like so appreciative for the tennis community, who has just been there every step of the way, supporting me, whether it be on social media or writing to me or whatever. It's all seen and it is all vastly appreciated.
I say this with the texts and emails to confirm it, that I speak for a lot of people when I say it's good to hear this, it's good to hear from you, and a lot of people are looking forward to seeing you back out there.
Well, hopefully it won't be too long. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Hawaii is not a bad place to launch a comeback.
No, that was strategic.
This is great. I hope you lavish yourself with all sorts of hotel suites and trainers and massages and first-class airfare. This is really just really good conversation. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for chatting, and thanks for caring about my story.
Good luck, and look forward to seeing you on the court soon.
All right. I'll be back soon. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Take care.
All right, that does it for this podcast. Thanks so much to Nicole Gibbs. Always a pleasure talking with her. And I think you just got a vivid illustration of why. So we wish her well. Tennis wishes her well. And you also wish other players had, other athletes, other people had a fraction of that perspective. So this was a little bit different. We'll be back to hardcore X's and O's. We're in the middle of the third major of Wimbledon. But I thought people have been asking about Nicole, and I thought this would be a good update podcast. So thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for the guest suggestions. Keep them coming. We'll try to do a few more of these at Wimbledon. Maybe Jamie and I will assess the tournament periodically. And you can subscribe to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. Leave a review. Keep the guest suggestions coming. Enjoy Wimbledon, and we'll do it again soon.